Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
And welcome to a brand new iteration of the Blazers Edge podcast. I am Dave Deckard, your old familiar voice who's been with you since the beginning. And this version is going to be a little different for those podcast veterans who have been with us for years and years. No co-host, just you and me, because at this point, I have been here long enough to be your daddy in the Trailblazer sense. Thus, Trail Daddy, the new Blazers Edge podcast, you and me talking Trailblazers every week. And admittedly, this is an odd time to start a podcast. This was supposed to start a few weeks ago. However, I had some medical issues that prevented me from doing that. So now is as good a time as any. We will head with you through the end of the season and the summer. And we want to start episode one with an admission that this has kind of been a frustratingly lost season for the Blazers. Now, I'm not talking about the 19 wins. That was kind of expected, maybe not quite that bad, but we knew the Trailblazers weren't going to make it to the upper levels of the NBA playoff bracket this year. That surprises nobody. The fact that they lost a few more than we thought probably shouldn't disturb you too much either. It simply helps the lottery pick prospects. But the Blazers started the season with a lot of questions to answer, somewhat in confusion. And we thought, with a solid year under their belt, we would start to have some answers to those questions. And today, we want to look at five of the questions which they really wanted to answer and ended up not. The frustrating thing about being most of the way through this season, 80, almost 90% now, is how little we know about this team compared to when we started in the fall. There are only a couple things that we have down solid. Probably they need some offensive help. We know that. Jeremy Grant is a really solid player. We know that. They have a couple of really young players who have some defensive potential, who might be able to contribute in the future. But that's to be expected on a team that's made up like this. If they didn't have any, we'd suspect something was wrong with them. But their major, major questions remain unanswered. So let's take some time to explore some of those and take a look at the direction they might be going or whether we can even figure that out. Now, question number five on our list. Is Anfernee Simons really a star? Going into the season, we knew Ant was going to get a lot more responsibility and was going to get plenty of minutes to prove himself. He has gotten 34.4 minutes this season, which is about average for a starter. He's gotten more field goal attempts, 18.2, than at any time in his career. And he's scoring 22.6 points per game, which conveniently enough is right in the odd zone for an NBA first level player. Now, normally 20 points a game historically is a marker that you are something. But there is such inflation now in overall scoring and in individual scoring that really 20 points a game, it's kind of, I won't say expected, but if you're a really good NBA player, you should be able to average 20. Simons is a bit above that at 22.6. He also has 5.5 assists per game, which is a career high and a remarkable number. So we like that. And in both of those senses, you say, yes, this is an exciting young player that the Blazers can continue to develop. But his overall field goal percentage, 43.0, is nothing really to write home about. He's at 38.5% from the arc. Now, the asterisk with those is he's getting a lot of defensive attention. Whenever Anfernee Simons takes the floor, first of all, opponents are going to guard guards before anyone else, because that's the modern NBA, and they literally have a target painted on Ant. They know that he's the one to shut down if you want to stop Portland's offense. So he has been dealing with more defensive pressure this year than he ever has. That may explain some of the shooting percentages being down. However, the eye test and the results just kind of tell you, look, there's something to him. He's a firecracker. He can go off. But day in, day out, do you want this guy to be the number one option on your team? Is he good enough to carry you from either the shooting guard or the point guard position? And by the way, which is he? Because he's been better, at least to my view, with the ball in his hands this year. He's more comfortable scoring that way, and that's where he flourishes. But if he's going to take over that position, what happens to the point guards you're bringing up, and what happens to the other shooting guards behind him? Does he become a roadblock? Do you invest in him with his flaws and with his questions at the expense of younger players behind him, which is ironic because he's only 24, but that's the way the Blazers are right now. So, Anfernee Simons, is he your star? And if so, what flavor star is he? I don't believe the Blazers have answered that question yet. Neither has he. I think he's clearly the best guard on the team right now. He's clearly necessary if the team wants to win right now. But does that mean that he's the player you're going to grow into the future with? Considering the positional ambiguity, considering the relative lack of defense, considering the middling shooting percentages, we just don't know. And this is one of the questions we wanted an answer to this season, didn't get it. Here's number four, and it's the one that everybody is asking. Well, actually, I think few people are asking. Most people have answered it for themselves, at least if the Blazers Edge mailbag and other comment feedbacks are any indication. Can Chauncey Billups coach? Now, I think that there is more wiggle room in this question than most people do. Chauncey has experienced an injury-riddled lineup where there was inconsistency from day one, and that's only increased as the season has gone along. He's never had a really steady stretch with all five of his planned starters in place at once. They've gotten at best a couple weeks, and then somebody goes down. And there have been major swaths of this lineup missing. Obviously, Shaedon Sharpe is one of them. Anfernee Simons himself has only played 46 games this season. DeAndre Ayton, Jeremy Grant. These are huge, huge names. Even Scoot Henderson, their rookie, has missed weeks of time. That is not good for team continuity. For the team developing its systems, and for, what would you say, chemistry and execution. So I think that you can say that Billups has not had an entirely fair chance to show himself or his system this season. That said, how many seasons has it been where we've said basically the same thing? Last year, it's Damian Lillard and who else, and there were some injuries as well. And the year before, well, we're just getting used to each other. How many excuses, how many losing seasons can you take before you go, you know what? You don't get any more years to show what you can do. We need to see some results. Now, that contradicts a little bit what I said at the opening of the podcast, that we're not upset about 19 wins so far in the season. I don't think that that's Billups' fault. I think he could have coached amazingly. He could be Greg Popovich. He could be Monty Williams. Both of them are accomplished heralded coaches with lousy records this season because of the personnel that they have. But the difference is, A, they have a track record. And at least in Popovich's case, you can see some defined results down narrow channel that support the Spurs growing. I'm watching the Blazers, and I'm struggling to see any of those. They came into the season with Jeremy Grant. As we said, we know he's a good player. We really, really know it now. But that's not a change or a growth curve. Just about any area where you could forecast them growing, be it a defense, be it growth of stars, whatever you want to measure by, it basically hasn't happened. It's basically as much of a murky muddle as it was when we started. That's the whole premise of this podcast. And you know what? At a certain point, that does come to rest on the coach. It's not that Billups could have avoided everything, but you have to provide something. And it's just not there. And maybe, just maybe, it's not a matter of whether Chauncey Billups is a good or a bad coach, but rather that we didn't know that coming in when he had zero coaching experience and was hired on a long-term contract. And now, 3 years later, we still don't know that. And that in itself becomes an indictment. And you know what? It may be that with more experience, with a healthier lineup or whatever, Billups turns out to be great and his systems are wonderful. But I'm not sure that the Blazers can afford to spend more time figuring that out because we just do not know right now. And after 3 years, we should know more about this. Now, here comes another one, plagued by injuries that was really supposed to be a growth curve. And that was Shaedon Sharpe. Now, Sharpe was among the most mercurial Blazers last year, but fans fell in love with his absolute upside. He's terribly exciting. He has athleticism to burn. And if there's going to be a real breakout star on this roster, Sharpe is a likely candidate. However, he's only played 32 games this year. And he's averaging 33 minutes per game, which is more than enough to figure out what's going on. But with that small a sample size, those minutes almost don't matter. They're further complicated by the disruption at the point guard position. Scoot Henderson has not been really steady. Anfernee Simons, does he fill in? And if he does fill in, is he good at playing with or setting up Sharpe? We don't know. Other point guards, I mean, who are you talking about? At this point, it's Ashton Hagans. Really? Rip City Remix retread. Now, he may have some upside too, but if you at the beginning of the season said, you know, we're going to depend on Ashton Hagans to set up Shaedon Sharpe, that's a non-starter. You'd go, oh my gosh, that's a terrible idea, and we're not going to find out anything. And that's pretty much what has happened. Now, we do know that Sharpe has been more aggressive. We know that he's scoring more, that he's averaging more rebounds, that he's playing better defense, and all of those are to the good. But as with Simons, his shooting percentages have plummeted. Last year, he shot 47.2% from the field. This year, it's 40.6. Last year, he was 36.0% from the three-point arc. This year, it's 33.3. Neither of those numbers are very promising. And Sharpe's absolute upside had to do not just with his explosiveness in scoring, but his undeniability, his efficiency, if you will. And that efficiency has completely gone this season, even when he was healthy. And naturally, as you know, he's gotten injured. He's played very few games. He will miss almost 50 by the time the season is over. And that is a lost season for him. And that's a problem for the Blazers. It's not just his youth, but also, like Simons, he has positional ambiguity. Is he a shooting guard? Probably that's his most natural position. Can he play small forward at need? The Blazers might need him to. We don't know anything about either right now, or much more than we did at the beginning of the season. Can he be a starter is a huge question, and a lot of that is going to depend on his defense, and he just hasn't gotten enough reps to show it. And it's not that he doesn't have time. Again, the guy's 20 years old, all right? He's got a lot of seasons left. However, his developmental curve is so steep that every minute mattered this season, and he hasn't gotten to play most of them. And that question mark hurts almost more than any other, at least for me personally. I wanted to see what Shaden can do. We haven't gotten any idea. It's going to be a Control-Alt-Delete when he comes in next season. And basically what you're hoping for is that he doesn't get hurt again. And that's a very low bar to start a third season with for a player that you hope had so much potential. Ambiguity or question number two, DeAndre Ayton. And this one puzzles me more than anything. Now, Ayton has come on lately when everybody else got injured. Finally, we got to see him play. And he was really good on offense, good kind of mid-range, in the key scorer. Not going to be your classic post-up close to the basket center, but he's got good touch, and he definitely cannot be guarded one-on-one comfortably by most NBA centers if you get him the ball. He's shooting 58% from the field, which is just fine. It's a little below his career average, but not bad for switching to a new team and playing a bit less frequently. He's not got a three-point shot to worry about, but I wouldn't worry about that if I was the Blazers right now. He's been a great rebounder, if nothing else, because nobody else has been there to do it, with 11.1 rebounds per game. His 15.8 points, considering the way he's been used, has been nothing to complain about. But why did it take them so long and under such drastic circumstances to incorporate him? That's the big question I have. And if I'm going to ding the coaching staff for anything this year, this is part of it. You literally traded for this guy. This was the main get back for your Damian Lillard, Yusuf Nurkic trade. All right. You got rid of two starters, including the franchise player, in order to get a bright young center who had the potential to exceed his previous production and really take over and live up to perhaps his first overall pick billing that he's been carrying and carried in Phoenix and wasn't quite able to live up to. So instead of designing the offense to incorporate him, if not designing the offense around him, you let him find his own way for the first two-thirds of the season minimum. You kind of put him in no man's land and tell him, well, your job is to rebound and create your own opportunities, but we're not really going to feed you. And only when every other option is gone do you go, well, DeAndre, I guess it's you now. And he stepped up. I don't understand this. You either sink or swim with this guy, and instead you put him in a position to be not much better than he was to begin with. And that, in a season where everything else was crumbling, where all the guards were injured, where you even lost plenty of veteran forward minutes, but DeAndre, at 47 games at least, has been one of your more consistent players. He'll probably end up north of 50, which not much of your lineup is going to do. And you don't use him. You don't plan around him. You don't take advantage of that potential upside. And mind you, he's not 20. He is 25, 26. He is in his sixth NBA season, starting into his prime. And I do not understand why the Blazers left him as a question mark unless they have already made the decision that he is not a key player for their future. And that one I don't understand either, given the amount of data, because you know what? Center is still the rarest position in the league, and he is still one of a handful of centers that you can predict might make an outsized difference. I think the line between him and the NBA elite, Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, he is not there, all right? But in that next tier, I think Ayton could get there, at minimum offensively. And your lack of featuring him absolutely has left that in the dark and hamstrung his production this season. And you know what? It would be one thing if you made him the focus and he ran away from it. But I didn't see that happening at the beginning of the year. And in fact, when you did make him the focus, he stepped up. So why did it take you so long? And let's not spend another season doing this. Because you know what? Within another year, we're going to need some answers about Ayton in terms of future utility, in terms of contract and trade value and all those things. And it's time. It's time to figure out who this guy is so you can plan accordingly. And I am frustrated that we do not know more about him than we do right now, because he had the potential to be the anchor in the midst of this terrible storm, and it just has not happened. Then, of course, we have the number one question, which I think most people would rate as the most confusing and maybe among the most frustrating issues surrounding the Blazers. What the heck up with Scoot Henderson? Now, when he was drafted number 3 in the NBA draft, I'm not sure you expected at his age and with his experience that you'd get an automatic superstar. But I don't know anybody who wasn't expecting a starter. And Scoot has started only 24 out of 54 games simply because you can't start him. Because his offense has been poor enough that defenses, and they do it to this day, are able to play 2.5 to 3 steps off of him and absolutely shut down driving and passing opportunities that he otherwise would have. They are able to help easier on his teammates, and they are able to leave him alone for the 3-point shot at which he is still shooting just under 31%. It's a big issue. Now, he's come on in the last week or two, and he started scoring, and he's looked a little bit more accomplished. He's fit in more. I think as you've taken players away from him and he's become more of a scorer, he has looked more comfortable. But I still don't see him being very smooth running the offense. In fact, I still don't see the Blazers having much of an offense, period, with or without him. They're setting screens on the regular, and that's about all they're doing. I don't see a lot of action away from the primary screen. I don't see a lot of subsidiary screens setting up other players to get free for 3-pointers. I think with Scoot, basically it's binary. You either drive and you get a scoring opportunity, or you drive and try to dish to someone who's already covered, which doesn't really create an open shot, or you don't drive and you hoist up a 3 or a long shot, which probably isn't going in. And other than the driving and completing shots part of that, none of it is really working very well. And I don't know if that's how Scoot is being used. I don't know if that's his inherent talent. I think there are a couple, or both of those things come into play. However, we need to see more than this, both from and about Portland's highly drafted new point guard of the future. He hasn't had the chance to point guard much. In fact, this has been part of what's shifted the ball handling details onto Anfernee Simons and other players, who then have taken over more of the offense, which is good for them, but has not been great for the team since they aren't really natural facilitators the way Scoot is or is supposed to be. And it really feels like Scoot has made some strides during the season, but he's still nowhere close to what the Blazers hoped he would be, And we still have no idea whether he can be a bona fide starting point guard in the NBA. This is his first season. He has this grace period. I think some of it is taken away by his high draft position, but I think we have to give up on that now and just say the Blazers have got a player with potential and talent. All right, let's see how he develops. But again, this is what's so frustrating about the injuries, the coaching, the everything that goes on around Scoot, is that there's been no chance and no purchase for him to really get traction and get better consistently. And if you ask me if at the end of the season I know much more about Scoot than I did at the beginning of the season, I'd say other than the things he can't do right now, like shoot and maybe hold on to the ball, I don't. And that's really an indictment of this entire season. I mean, even more than DeAndre Ayton, who at least has played some solid minutes and you get the idea that he's Aytoning out there. I don't even know what Scoot Hendersoning is. And that itself, what are the Blazers doing with this year if they're not finding out that? So there, in a nutshell, I hate to be negative in the very first podcast, but look, this is the grand judgment on what the Blazers have done this year. And it's not that they're losing, and it's not that they've struggled, and it's not even really the injuries, although that certainly played into it. It's literally that at no point, no position, no player, do we know significantly more about this team than we did at the beginning of the year, nor have we seen significant strides other than in guys like Tumani Kamara, who has gotten an inordinate amount of minutes and has shown that he can rebound and defend. But every team is going to have those young players who step up and prove themselves at some point. That counts, but there's an ordinariness to that, a natural progression. At least that went well, I guess. But among the key players and among the key systems, this has really been a lost and head-scratching year. And whether it's management, coaching, training staff, or whomever it else it might be, this cannot continue. The Blazers cannot have another year like this, because that would be an unmitigated disaster. They've got to draft. And yes, you go best player available, but you also have to know after that if there's a logjam at those positions where you draft, who comes out on top? And what do you do in the future to move players? How do you begin to settle this into moving towards a recognizable squad? And right now, we don't know. Tell me whether Anthony Simons is capable of carrying this team. Tell me whether Scoot Henderson is. Tell me whether DeAndre Ayton is a reliable playoff center. You can't, and neither can I. And that in itself is the huge judgment, the huge problem with this year. Something has got to change over the summer. I hope the Blazers themselves have a better idea than we do. They're certainly not playing or coaching like it. But hopefully they have some more insight than we do. Because in this system, talent accumulation will not be enough. That's the scary point, and that's the point I'm going to leave you with. They have a lot of draft picks coming. Fair enough. Whether it's a weak draft this year remains to be seen, but they have drafts, multiple draft picks this year. They have even more in years to come. That's like having the potential to get some good ingredients at the store. If you can't cook, if you don't have a functioning kitchen, you're still not going to be able to make dinner. And that's what they've shown this year. They're not functioning. At this point, they're not even really functioning as an NBA franchise. But even when they were healthier, they were not functioning coherently on either end of the court, nor were you coaxing great performances out of the team or out of really any individual inside it, except, again, old faithful Jeremy Grant, who's going to do what Jeremy Grant does no matter what. That is inexcusable, and that needs to change. So as we go forward, hopefully into more positivity into the off season, let us see if we get more coherence. Let's see if they make any moves that indicate that they've decided that they know who they are and which direction they're going forward. And most of all, let's see if they don't set themselves up next fall to have a more definitive season and a more definitive idea of who the heck they are. Because this absolutely smacks of the worst of the losing franchises. And I got to see some of them up close. The Minnesota Timberwolves in those years when they were lost. The Sacramento Kings when they were wandering. The Los Angeles Clippers long ago. They added players. They tried for solutions. It all ended up in this kind of nameless, messy mush that didn't produce anything because there was no coherent system to support it. Scarily enough, the Trailblazers are exactly in that position right now, and it's not a good one. Let's see if they set themselves up over the summer to get more defined and to get more traction going forward. If not, oh boy, are we going to have things to talk about next season. We will be back soon with Trail Daddy, Episode 2. Until then, thanks for listening, and I hope that your Trailblazers week is enjoyable. Next time, I promise we'll have a more positive topic, probably talking about the things that went well this season. And even though that's a shorter list, it's still important and there are still good things to watch. So have fun watching the end of the season as it unwinds. And as always, go Blazers! It's just a matter of where you want them to go at this point.